This is Radio Moscow.
Radio Moscow presents Man in Space. On April the 12th, Major Yuri Gagarin radiophoned to Earth from somewhere out in space.
I feel fine. I'm observing the Earth. Visibility is good. I hear you very well. The flight is going normally.
108 minutes after he shot into space to orbit the Earth on the rocket satellite Vostok, Major Gagarin was back in the Soviet Union, safe and sound. The world had entered a new space age. Premier Khrushchev congratulated the first space traveler with these words.
The flight you have just made inscribes a new page into the history of the human race.
Meanwhile, Academy of Sciences President Alexander Nesmianov was telling the press,
man's penetration into outer space offers stupendous opportunities. The road to the planets is now open. This is indeed a new era for humanity. It will work profound changes.
While Mikhail Lavrentiev, Academy Vice President and head of its Siberian branch, was saying,
Major Gagarin's flight points up the power of Soviet science. What makes our science strong is its scope. We have the skilled personnel required to solve any problem without delay. Every year, great numbers of young men and women swell the ranks of our scientists, and more large research centers are opened.
And to this, Nikolai Semyonov, the chemist, added,
I feel very certain that such a tremendous expansion of our field of observation resulting from space studies will lead to remarkable achievements in science and engineering which we cannot even imagine today.
Step by step, the Soviet Union prepared for man's first flight into outer space. Do you remember these signals coming out of the cosmos 3.5 years ago? Yes, it was the voice of the world's number one man-made satellite of the Earth, launched by the Soviet Union on October 4, 1957. Several more Earth satellites followed it, and then came a series of rockets to the moon, one of them photographing the hidden side of the Earth's natural satellite. Now a Soviet rocket is on the way to Venus. Last year, the Soviet Union moved into the final stage of its preparations for manned flight. A number of giant satellites weighing over 4 tons were laid on orbits and returned to Earth. Then it was that a man was put aboard, for his safety was ensured. Back on the ground again, Major Gagarin told the world what millions of people have wondered about and no one could say before. He explained how it feels to be in space and what you see from there.
Asked how he felt on the eve of the flight, the hero of the day said, I was terribly happy. I was overjoyed to be chosen. My greatest dream was coming true. Like many other people, I had asked, when the time came, to be allowed to make a space flight, and here I was being given the chance. The reporter wanted to know what the Major thought about during the difficult period of powered flight to the orbit. His mind was intent on his work, Yuri Gagarin stated. He wanted to do the best he could on the work mapped out for him, and there was plenty of it throughout the journey, from takeoff to landing. Describing what the Earth and the Sun looked like from out in space, Major Gagarin said, much like what they do to stratosphere pilots, only the view is broader and the colors are brighter and richer. On the sun-lighted side of the earth, I had a good view of big rivers and other large bodies of water, forests and coastlines. The surface of bodies of water? Well, they were dark spots that slightly sparkled. Did the earth resemble a sphere? Major Gagarin found it did. When I looked at the horizon, he said, I could easily see the sharp transition from the bright surface of the earth to an absolutely black sky. Our planet seemed to be encircled with a light blue halo. The halo gradually darkened, turned violet, and then altogether black. The shading was very beautiful. It's hard to put it into words. The reporter asked how the Earth looked when the spaceship moved from one side of it to the other. First, there was a bright orange band, Major Gagarin said. Then, imperceptibly, it changed to a light blue, and this darkened to violet, and then something approaching black. The sun was unusually bright. You couldn't look at it with the naked eye, even squinting. It was probably hundreds of times brighter than when we see it from Earth. The stars, too, were very bright and distinct on the black background of outer space. Unfortunately, I couldn't see the moon. It was out of my line of vision all during the flight. About the state of weightlessness, Major Gagarin said that the transition to this state was very smooth. When the effect of the Earth's pull began to disappear, he felt fine. Everything became easier to do. In general, there was a sense of unusual ease. Yes, it was very, very strange, said the Major. I felt as though my hands and feet and whole body weren't mine at all. They didn't weigh a thing. I seemed to be hanging in midair, and everything that wasn't fastened down also floated in midair. Is it difficult to coordinate one's movements in such a state? Major Gagarin said, not at all, just the opposite. He told how he jotted down notes at the time, but he had to hold the notebook lest it slip away. His handwriting was the same as on Earth in ordinary conditions. He also tapped out messages to the Earth in Morse code in this state, and everything went all right. Asked whether he had had a chance to have breakfast out there in space, the 27-year-old astronaut said, Yes, I ate and drank, and weightlessness did not interfere with it. In fact, I ate my space breakfast with the same appetite as I have on Earth. The transition from weightlessness back to the action of the Earth's pull, Major Gagarin said, was as smooth as the opposite transition at the beginning of the flight. Instead of hovering in the air above the pilot's seat, he found himself sitting in the seat. When the reporter asked whether the Major would have minded a longer flight, he heard the reply, Not at all. I could have stayed in space much longer if the program had demanded it. I felt well all the time. My ability to work was in no way affected. My mind was perfectly clear, and my spirits were top all the time. But Major Gagarin could find no words to explain how he felt when he touched down on Earth. He said he even began to sing as he approached. He knew that the flight was ending safely, and the job he had been given was accomplished. Yuri Gagarin's message to the world is that there is enough room in space for everyone. It is my greatest hope, the Major told our reporter, that outer space will never be used for purposes of war. It must be kept for peaceful exploration. We have read that American pilots are preparing for space flights, said Major Gagarin. We shall be glad to hail their success.
You're listening to Man and Space, prepared by Radio Moscow. And now you will hear the opinions of two scientists and an engineer about some of the major difficulties of manned space flight, the stresses and strains at takeoff, the state of weightlessness during orbital flight, and re-entry. The three speakers are Professor Dobron Ravov, the mechanics expert, Professor Nikolaev, Doctor of Medicine, and Engineer Sushkov. First, here is Professor Dobronravov on strains at takeoff.
During the short takeoff period, the velocity of a spaceship reaches 8,000 meters, or 4.8 miles per second. Let us suppose that this speed is attained in, say, 200 seconds. Therefore, this means that the spaceship will have an acceleration of 40 meters, or about 130 feet per second. That is, four times faster than the normal acceleration of the Earth's gravitational pull. This force will press all the objects in the spaceship to the bottom with a force five times greater than the usual normal weight of the object. Medical science is studying in detail the effect of inertial overloads of varying intensities on living organisms. It determines the top overloads that can be endured, the duration of their action, and so on. In particular, it has been discovered that the most favorable position of the body while bearing an overload is the prone position, or, to be more exact, a crouched prone position. The astronaut lies on the floor and his legs on a seat form sort of a shelf. After the spaceship enters an almost circular orbit around the Earth, the space pilot is confronted with another phenomenon, the exact opposite to overload, that is, weightlessness.
Here is what Professor Nikolaev, a medical specialist, writes about weightlessness.
Is life possible in the state of weightlessness? There were many different answers to this question not so long ago. Certain scientists claim that with the complete absence of a gravitational pull, a person could live for only a matter of minutes. They back their claim by asserting that the body would not be able to cope with the sharp changes in the nervous regulation of blood circulation and the great drop in blood pressure in the region of the heart. Others said that astronauts would not feel bad at all. Scientists then created the state of weightlessness in laboratories on the Earth's surface, in rocket flights, and in planes. Special devices were built to change the gravitational pull artificially. Short periods of weightlessness can be created in speedy elevators of skyscrapers. However, aviation presents wider possibilities in this field. For example, a state of weightlessness lasting 50 seconds was achieved in a parabolic flight of a plane. Greater results, as long as 45 minutes, were obtained in experiments with high-altitude rockets. Most people remember the famous dog Laika on board the second Soviet Earth Sputnik. Its condition was satisfactory. Electrocardiograms did not reveal any rational changes in the work of Laika's heart. A new series of experiments with animals followed after Laika. These experiments gave the doctors hope because there was no violation in the work of the heart. Practically speaking, there were no changes in blood circulation or in the respiratory system. Observations showed that there should be no grave disturbances in digestion. People who had never gone through the stage of weightlessness cannot control their movements in space. For example, they could not even perform a simple thing as drawing a cross inside a square on paper. If, in the state of weightlessness, a person closes his eyes, he will make even greater mistakes and will lose his sense of direction in space. However, after enough training, he can successfully perform the necessary work. Trained people, especially jet pilots, have a good sense of direction in space and can perform operations which demand rigid coordination of movements. This is evident from the message Yuri Gagarin radioed back to Earth while cruising over Africa. State of weightlessness, feel fine. After orbiting the Earth according to program, the braking system was switched on, and the spaceship with Gagarin on board began to lose altitude.
What is the method of decelerating a Sputnik orbiting the Earth? This question was answered for us by Yuri Sushkov, an expert in mechanics. This is what he writes.
The braking system of the spaceship must develop a force counteracting the movement of the ship itself. However, to do so, the spaceship must be in certain position at the moment the brakes are switched on. The stabilizing system prevents the ship from revolving chaotically around its center of gravity. The direction-finding system of the spaceship feels the direction of the flight and sets the Sputnik back on its course whenever it strays. After the ship has been ordered to land, the braking system is switched on. The spaceship peels off its orbit and starts diving down to Earth. At a speed about 25 times faster than the speed of sound, the ship cuts into the denser layers of the Earth's atmosphere. At this point, a shock wave has already formed in front of the spaceship. A sort of air cushion forms between the shock wave and the nose of the descending Sputnik. The temperature of this air cushion goes as high as several thousand degrees. Part of the heat from the air cushion is conducted by the surrounding medium, and part of it is conducted by the spaceship raising its temperature. Kinetic energy of the descending Sputnik is spent on forming the shock wave and heating the air cushion. The result is a great loss in speed. If special measures are not taken, the descending ball-shaped Sputnik will lose several dozen yards in each of the following seconds. What is more, the overload which occurs in sudden braking can reach a dangerous level. The degree of overload is determined by the velocity and the density of the air, and also the shape and weight of the spaceship.
You've just heard the opinions of two Soviet scientists and an engineer about such difficulties of manned spaceflight as the strains at takeoff, the state of weightlessness in orbital flight, and re-entry. What sort of a man is the world's first space traveler? What was he like as a boy? Who were his parents? And has he a family of his own? These questions are answered by a Radio Moscow correspondent who visited the Gagarins at their home on Wednesday morning when the major took off for the stars.
It was an ordinary street, an ordinary house, and an ordinary staircase leading to the fifth floor. A woman opened the door to my ring. "Is this the Gagarin apartment?" "Yes," she answered. My excitement as I stood on the threshold of this home could easily be understood. This was where the first astronaut lived, in this three-room apartment with its friendly wallpaper, drapes, bookshelves, and round table. The radio and television were not turned off at all in this apartment. Gagarin and his wife have two little girls, Lena and Galya. The wife's name is Valya, and she is 26 years old. When I congratulated her, she seemed embarrassed and happy and worried. No wonder there were a dozen emotions in the heart of this young woman, all of them reflected on her face. Her husband was still flying through space. He had just reported that everything was proceeding normally. With a shaking hand, she twirled the dials of the radio and jotted down the hour and minute of the last report in the school notebook. "That's Papa," said little Lena, who was busy chewing an apple. "The flight is continuing," said the radio announcer. "The astronaut Yuri Gagarin is feeling well." At this point, his wife wiped her tears and smiled. On the round table were three photograph albums. There was Gagarin as a small boy in short pants running toward a river. The picture was made in the village where he lived as a child. Another picture showed him with schoolmates, a jolly boy with a shock of blonde hair. There was a photograph of his mother and father, and another of him taken with his school teacher. On another page of the album, I noticed a large group picture with the inscription Saratov Industrial Technical School, graduating class of 1955. Among the many signatures of young people, I found the familiar signature Yuri Gagarin. There was another photograph on the same page of Yuri Gagarin standing on the wing of a plane, waving his hand at someone as though about to say something very cheerful. He finished the industrial school and the course at the aircraft club simultaneously. By that time, this determined boy had made up his mind he wanted to be a pilot. A picture shows him in the uniform of a student at a flying school. Finally, I came to the last photograph, still a very young man, solidly built, below average height, with a frank, appealing face and a winning smile. Here again, the radio announcer said, "The flight is continuing." Mrs. Gagarin picked up the notebook and again wrote down the hour and minutes, as well as what was said about her husband's condition. A sure road led him to outer space. His picture shows him to be a strapping figure of a man with a face grown older and thinner. Between the pages of the album, I found diplomas for exemplary service, for excellence, for a victory in the basketball championship. Another picture was taken on sports ground, and alongside it, his comrades are putting him into a plane. Written with colored pencils was the inscription, "The unit congratulates Yuri Gagarin on his first flight in a jet plane." Another page, and I find the first pictures of Mrs. Gagarin. She wears a nurse's white smock. Alongside is another picture of her, this time in an evening gown. The picture seems to have been made especially for her husband. With Mrs. Gagarin's permission, I jotted down the inscription on that photograph. "Yuri, remember that we ourselves forge our happiness. Never bow your head before fate. Remember that to wait is a great art. Save this feeling for your very happiest minutes. March 9th, 1957, Valia." And another inscription, this time in her husband's handwriting. "To my dearly beloved Valia, may this photograph help you to safeguard our eternal and all-conquering love. March 16th, 1958, Yuri." Farther on in the album, the Gagarins are photographed together. They are picking flowers in the forest, getting suntanned on the beach, visiting friends. There are wedding pictures, too. The astronaut's father, Alexei Gagarin, stands beside his son. His mother, Anna, looks tenderly at the young couple. A new person appeared in the family. Her name is Lena. In one picture, her face is hidden by a white blanket. But how much happiness can be read on the faces of the young mother and father? They are pictured pushing the baby carriage with its beloved passenger. Then there's a picture of Lena taking her first steps. And again came the voice of the radio announcer, "The flight is continuing successfully." What a sensation this is causing throughout the world. How many people are glued to their radio sets. Mrs. Gagarin picks up Lena and pulls a doll out of a drawer to show me. Lena's father had given her this doll before leaving the house. "He feels fine, fine." Mrs. Gagarin brushed away a tear. "Fine, Lenochka, do you understand?" Photographs can tell the whole story. Before taking off, they train hard and long. Yuri trained very hard. He used to come home very tired. He is 27 years old. He lived right among us. He sat next to us in the movies, and on Sundays he pushed the baby carriage through the park. A month ago, his wife gave birth to another daughter. Galia, they named her. He went visiting. He played basketball and billiards, and none of us knew what his occupation was. He was a man who was training. And so there he was, sailing in outer space. "He can see the stars right now," said a pilot neighbor watching the TV with the kids from next door. Mrs. Gagarin took little Galia into her arms as she suddenly began to cry. The Soviet ship Vostok has just made a successful landing at a pre-designated region. And then several more words, very dear to those who sat at their radios. The announcer said, "Landing normal, feeling fine, no injuries or bruises." "He's alive. My dear Yuri is alive," and tears of joy ran freely down her cheeks as she kissed her little girl. The neighbors kissed her and congratulated her. And we took our last shots, waiting our turn. We also shook the hand of this, the happiest woman on earth.
You've just heard a story of a correspondent who visited the home of Yuri Gagarin when the Soviet spaceship Vostok was successfully launched and landed. At the same time, other newsmen visited the home of Yuri's parents, who live in the old Russian town of Gzhatsk, a Smolensk region in the center of the European part of the USSR. Here is what the reporter is right.
59-year-old Alexei Gagarin, Yuri's father, is a carpenter. His mother, Anna Gagarin, 58 years old, looks after the house. "I was very happy to learn about my son flying in outer space," said Alexei Gagarin. "I would like to say one thing to my son. A million thanks from his mother and myself, from our whole family, and from all the townsfolk of Gzhatsk." Yuri Gagarin also has a sister and two brothers living in the town of Gzhatsk. "Yuri liked planes when he was still a boy," said Valery, his brother who drives a truck. "He used to build gliders and airplane models. His dream was to become a pilot. He was a good student. and now his dream has come true. Asked how Yuri's next of kin took the news that he became the world's first astronaut, his sister Zoya, who works as a nurse in the local hospital, said, "To tell you the truth, we did not even know anything about it until today," said Zoya. "He's very modest and a bit shy. Whenever we asked what he was up to, he would only shrug his shoulders and say, 'What are we doing? We fly, and that's all.'"
Every Soviet citizen naturally feels mighty proud of Yuri Gagarin. But actually, his act of heroism is the exploit of all mankind, Russians, Americans, Frenchmen, Britishers, and everyone else. Because through him, world science has won a victory. As Premier Khrushchev said at the meeting of welcome when Major Gagarin arrived in Moscow,
"The whole of mankind would gain greatly if people would exchange with each other the best of what they possess. People must concentrate all their efforts on deeds worthy of man."
You've been listening to Man in Space, prepared by Radio Moscow.